thank you for taking the ride on the Freedom Train Podcast Series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, always ride with me is my big homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. He holds it down straight from the South. And remember, the Freedom Train Podcast Series is brought to you by PAX Inc., that's PACTSINC, and PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on economics and education with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org to learn more about the PAX Org organization, all the members of the organization, and all of the things that they have developed and what they do for the black community. So make sure you check them out. As you always know, while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com to learn more about myself, learn more about Patrick, and, you know, Jamie, as well as get more acquainted with the Freedom Train Network lineup. You know, every Monday you have the Fix Sports Podcast. Every Wednesday you have the Freedom Train Podcast Series, along with the live showing or the live streaming of Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones and Erica Tobert. And every Thursday you have Lessons from the Screen with Patrick Irvin, when he breaks down documentaries, movies, TV shows, documents, YouTube videos, whatever need to be broken down for the black community. So, Pat.
What up?
Finished getting your bikini waxed.
Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. I'm still a little tender, though.
There it is, man. They say you're going to slide through life a little better now.
I see you ready? Got one on your head that's permanent.
Hey, man. Forget you, dog. Okay? That's genetics, okay?
Why you start with me, man? I'm over here looking at this unrefined organic African shea nut butter on this website. I ain't never seen stuff this cheap before. I'm being completely honest here. Usually this stuff be like $20,
$30, $40. Good pricing. So basically what you're talking about is the Nutrirology organic plant-based store, right? That's what you're talking about, right?
Yes, that's okay. What I'm talking about. Yeah.
Okay. And you seen and going through this store, you seen some things that could possibly help you stop from being ashy, right?
Yeah, matter of fact, they got the outside of the oils and butters, I was looking at the melanin babies. Sometimes my scalp be a little bit dry. Sometimes, you know, sometimes looking like the dude from the Head and Shoulders commercials back in the early 2000s, 1990s. So I'm looking at this like this could be a game changer right here.
Hey, man, you never know. Do they got something to help hairlines grow back, like edges grow back? I might need that. We're going to ask. We're going to find out, though.
You might need to talk to Black Jesus about that one.
Forget you. So today on the Freedom Train, as you can see, we're talking about plant-based products. We're talking about taking the natural route and beautifying yourself, and in just keeping yourself up, keeping the buoyancy in your skin. See, I said I've been watching some stuff, keeping the buoyancy in your skin, right? Not being ashy all the time, but doing it in a healthy way, like beautifying yourself and keeping yourself healthy from the outside in a good way. And you smell good, too. So we would like to welcome Trisha Yada Burton, who is the CEO of Nutrirology LLC, and her husband, Brent Burton Jr., is also they're co-CEOs of Nutrirology, and she is also the founder and creator of Melanin Mother's Meat, and we'll learn more about that. So, Trisha Yada Burton, we would like to welcome you to the Freedom Train Podcast Series. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. I'm doing well. Greetings to everybody. Thank you for having me, the co-creator and founder of Nutrirology.
Nutrirology, okay.
With my husband Nutrirology to nurture. That's what we're focusing on.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, Pat, you made me say it wrong.
Nah, because that was going to be my first question is it nutrir or nurture? Because you were confused.
So don't forget that R. Y'all see that R right
nurture.
There?
Nurture.
Yeah.
That's important.
Now, she also does a homeschooling group. From looking at it right, Joe, you might need to attend a few sessions.
Hey, man, I know because I got some information I want to share. So definitely talk about that.
Whatever.
Definitely. So, you know how we do, Pat. You got the first question, man. Let's go ahead and kick this thing off.
So, Miss Burton, how did you come to be known as a scalp nutritionist?
A what?
A scalp nutritionist.
Okay. You making up words, but I feel you.
I'm sorry. I'm using Joe speak. Nutritionist. I'm sorry.
Funny. So the scalp nutritionist. Well, I've been doing hair for about 20 years, and recently I came to the conclusion that we as a people do not know what it means to take care of our scalp, especially when it comes to growing healthy and happy hair. So I just made it my job to teach my clients how to care for their hair by caring for their scalp first. So once you treat the scalp, then you treat the hair. And I think a lot of people go with it backwards. They treat the hair and not necessarily paying attention to the scalp, which never evolves their hair. And then they have, you know, have all these questions about why, when the fact of the matter is the focus never was on the problem.
You right. know what? See, when you put it like that, you should be all over the place giving lectures, seminars. You should be on TV, on radio, because that's right. something that, like...
I ain't never heard nobody put it like that.
Right. And like my wife went through the big chop. It's been about 2-3 years ago now, somewhere around there. And, like, that's something that she was struggling with, and that she still kind of struggles with, and she struggles getting advice with, is like healthy hair, how to take care of it, how to manage it, how to maintain it, and how to grow it healthy. And I've never really heard anybody say, and it sounds so simple now that you say it, it's like, duh. But I've never heard anybody say, stop focusing on your hair, focus on your scalp.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, so how did you get started? Say it again.
No, I was saying that she's not the only one, you know. Oh, yeah. A lot of us have those, you know, issues as far as with knowing what the actual problem is. But I think a lot of the time when people are going to the salon and they're going to, you know, talk to people about their hair, that's what they're talking about, just their hair. And nobody has really said, hey, well, you might want to pay attention to your scalp, because that's, you know, and for me, you know, doing it for 20 years, you know, even doing this for 20 years has not, you know, I'm still a student. I learn something new every time I do hair, because every scalp is different. Everybody's hair is different. Everyone is different. So, you know, it's always an ongoing learning process. So, and that's why I love it so much, because it's always something new to learn.
That is good. So how did you get started in doing hair? Was it something that was just always a passion of yours, or somebody kind of, you know, gave you some skills or some tips? So how did you get started in it?
So I was about 9 years old, and my mother would do my hair, and I didn't like how she did it. I didn't like it. I was tender-headed. I just wasn't feeling it. So I vowed to myself at 9 years old that I was going to start doing my own hair, and that's exactly what I did. I remember in middle school, you know, I used to braid my hair and weave, and I would have my friends, because I played sports, I ran track and played basketball, so
yeah.
I would do my you know, my teammates' hair before games, you know, things like that. So that's pretty much what started me there. The inspiration was from my mother not really doing it how I wanted it done or how I wanted it to look, and so I was just like, you know what, my mama take it from here, and that's how I started.
Ain't nothing wrong with that, taking your hair into your own hands.
That's right.
That's what's up.
Now
that's,
you know,
what's up.
I meant to ask this question first, but then I was like, well, people could just go to the website at www.nurturology.net, but I realized that some people won't. So can you define, like, when you say nurturology, what does that mean? Get that definition for the people that's listening.
So nurturology, we got that name from obviously its root word, which is to nurture. And so me being a nurturer myself, you know, I always thought about
what does it mean to nurture, period? You know, what does that mean? And, you know, just really honing, you know, your skills of development, growing, you know, the knowledge in yourself, you know, about yourself and about your about others, you know, and that's where we have nurturology from. So nurturology is pretty much learning and developing yourself as a Black person, learning about, you know, your skin and your scalp and just pretty much whatever it is that you need to nurture at that time frame, that's what we're going to focus on. So what nurturology is focusing on now is skin and scalp. So that's what we want to make sure that we're creating and developing within yourself is knowledge on how to treat your scalp, how to, you know, produce products for your scalp and your skin, what products are helping your skin instead of hurting your skin, mm-hmm. and then why it's so important to have these products, you know, and have this knowledge of yourself.
Okay. I do want to ask this question, just kind of jump piggybacking on what you just said. What are some of the, I guess you could say, mistakes or some of the things that people are doing to, outside like the perms and stuff, but what are some things that people are doing to their scalps that may be hurting the growth of their hair or the quality of their hair?
I would switch that to diet. A lot of people aren't drinking enough water. A lot of people are eating too much starch that turns into sugar that dehydrates the blood cells, which shows up on the scalp. A lot of people are eating a lot of things that are not healthy for, you know, for you as a Black person, period. A lot of things are not alkaline. A lot of things are allowing for candida or yeast to grow on the scalp. So a lot of people, they would see, you know, what they think is dandruff, but it's actually yeast growing a layer over your scalp, which is not healthy either. And, you know, a lot of people think that, okay, well, I can just use this product and that's going to clean the scalp, or I can just use that product and that's going to clean the scalp. But really, it's internally where you have to start.
Okay. So
she just Hulk smashed that question.
She did. I like that. Like, yeah, bare bonds, pre-steroids.
Yeah. You know, where's the, right. the fat man with the little shirt?
Like, what you got? There you go. That's my dog. That's my homeboy, the man in the shirt.
Yeah, she just that question was obliterated. We should retire that question's number in the band. I wasn't expecting her to start talking about starch and sugar and blood components and yeast going on the scalp and like, yo, you see how all that's interconnected too? You see how, when you know somebody know they stuff. I'm sorry.
We love it. Hey, man, we've been blessed. We be getting good guests, man.
You see how she just connected diet, nutrition, genetics, the circulatory system.
Conjunction, all that.
We got real good having an asthma attack, man.
So I do want to ask this, right? Since we're on this, you're talking about what people are putting in their bodies, just period. So you use plant-based products as self-care products. So what are the benefits of using these plant-based products as self-care products, and what advantages do they have on the other more popularized or the products that you will find in stores?
So I would say the benefits of using plant-based products pretty much is to help heal and nourish the skin. And different products have different benefits, but mainly, you know, the main benefit is to nurture and to heal and to nourish the skin. Because a lot of the times, you know, we have, you know, our skin is a very huge organ. And, you know, sometimes what comes to my mind is, you know, I've seen people say that they, you know, when they're rushing, you know, at the house or something, and, you know, I know mostly like men, you know, they'll just put on the clothes and then maybe like lotion the spots that are going to be seen.
Stop talking about me.
And that's it. you know, and so it's just like, you know, yeah, that's, you know, that's good, but, you know, you want to focus on the whole organ as much as possible, you know, so that you can get the full benefit of the product that you're using. So I would just say, you know, and even when you're, I know you said the, you know, products in the store, even if you're purchasing products from the store, you know, just some good tips to look at is if you can't pronounce the words on the back of the bottle, and you know, you never want to focus on the front. You never want to focus on the front of the bottle, because the front of the bottle, you know, that's the gimmick to try to get you in, you know, because most people don't look at the back. You know, they just look at the front. The front says natural this, you know, healing that and nourish that. And then, oh, we're sold because of these, you know, these buzzwords, right? But when you turn on the back, none of those the buzzwords made the ingredients list, none of them. So it's just, you know, more so words that are about five-syllable long words that you don't really know what it means. And then you also have characters, yes, characters in the products that are not even known to those who are selling them.
Right. Right. Yeah, so, Pat, you got to leave that trinoglycerin diglactate alone if you be trying to sit down and use it.
So. Right. Hey. You know, you need about five ingredients maybe or less, and you know, if it goes above that, and then you know, you go into the names that you don't really know how to pronounce or even define, you know, you want to stay away from those kind of products.
Right.
Period.
Right.
Now let me interpret that for those of you who are trying to figure a way around that. If you're looking at something and you got to type it into Google and it's got more than 10 letters, and you got to Google search three different words and read eight different websites to figure out what it is and what it do, you probably don't need to be you. Because I know what a lot of y'all is going to do. Y'all going to be like, well, she said I don't need to use nothing I can't say, so I just make sure I know how to say everything I use. See, that's not what she's saying. You being slick. Stop it.
Right. Use more natural products, what she's saying. And lotion your whole body. Yeah.
No.
I had to start, I ain't gonna lie, moisturize. I started doing it. That's why I'm out of shape by the night, but I gotta get some more. But
yeah.
Gotta get them feet. Can't be walking around with the old man feet and them baseball knees, man.
Baseball knees.
I cannot. Oh,
you know, when you know you're out there sliding on the clay and your knees be orange and ashy.
I don't slide on clay, so I don't.
You
don't want that. And also because most of those chemicals are, you know, those names that we can't pronounce or define, a lot of them, you know, are starting to have and have been with plastic. You know, are you rubbing plastic on your body? A lot of the things they have, the chemicals. I think recently I was reading an article and it was just talking about how they're able to put chemicals in the products that are so small, like I think it's called like nanoparticles, where the particles are going into your skin and they're able to change, you know, your actual DNA. And so that's, you know, that might be a little deeper that, you know, but this, I would just even suggest just researching, you know, the names of these ingredients on the back of your products, because, you know, they put them in there for a reason, and it's not to benefit or nourish or heal the skin. That's for sure.
Right.
Now, I do know a little bit about that because I know a little bit about genetics because I'm a geek, low-key. I guess I'm not really low-key. It's pretty obvious.
Jolie.
Shut up.
Oh.
but that's because, like, while you're talking, I'm glad I got this silent keyboard because I've been over here Googling the hell out of everything. it's so fascinating. Like, it is. Go ahead, Joe.
Not forget you, man. My silent keyboard. I heard that.
Hey,
so
that was not a low key shot.
It was a straight shot to my eyes. I know.
It was a heavy subliminal. Go ahead.
So as we're talking more about the moisturizing of the skin and you using different products externally to keep your skin moisturized and at its best, what foods actually aid in the moisturizing process from the inside out? So what are things that people should be eating to help keep their skin healthy?
Well, first I want to say for drinking purposes, let's start with drinking. You got to drink water because you want to make sure that your skin isn't dehydrated. So before we even get to moisturization, let's get to rehydration. We want to make sure that the skin is, you know, nice and hydrated. And then after we hydrate the skin, we want to also make sure we moisturize the skin to, you know, protect the hydration from evaporating off the skin. So, you know, things that you can eat. I eat a lot of avocados. Avocados are good. The omega fats, anything that really has, like, fat in it. And it's not even about, because I'm a vegan. So I may sound biased, so I'm not going to mention anything that's dairy or meat or anything like that. Most of the intake that I'll suggest is leafy greens, kale, you know, anything that's alkaline, you know, cucumber. Cucumber is always good for hydration of the skin because it's mostly water. You also can have a lot of intake with, what is it, asparagus. I'm doing asparagus. Asparagus is good for the skin. Also, just really, you know, any fruits, you know. So if you have apples are good. Watermelon is good. Just pretty much fruits that are mostly water. Kiwi is good. You know, so things like that. Food that have mostly water in them are good for moisturization of the skin. Blueberries, you know, those types of things. Coconut, things like that.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. Of course you have a question. It's an interview.
So, and this is completely off topic, which is probably why I said it like that. But when you said you were a vegan, what was interesting was the way you said it. You didn't say it like you were better than non-vegans. So my question is, how did you get there? Because I've never met a vegan that announced that they were a vegan in such a way that didn't make every non-vegan person in the room hate them. And I thought it was impossible to do, but you just pulled it off. So, like, how did you get to this point in your life with your vegan status?
That's a really good question. You know, and I used to be the vegan that you hate. I did. I really did. But I did evolve from that, and that was only through years of looking at everybody who wasn't listening to me. You know, like, it was like, okay, y'all not listening. I'm not worried about what y'all gonna do with y'all body, because that's y'all body. And I just, you know, it's just like, for me, it just became about me. You know, I'm going to be the example. You know, if somebody has a question about what, you know, how I eat or what I'm doing, then I'll answer. But I'm not going to make it, you know, an announcement everywhere I go to say, hey, I'm vegan. You know what I mean? And then just kind of leave it up in the air. So I just, you know, I just came to the conclusion that, you know, I'm not better than the people that aren't eating like me. However, I am very confident and how I'm eating. I'm very, very sure and very certain in my lifestyle. And I think that's really all it is. It has anything, you know, once you just, you know, kind of own that, everything else just kind of falls in place. You know what I mean? So it's not about me trying to convince the next person, you know, or trying to force my lifestyle on the next person, but just living, you know. I just live, and, you know, whoever is attracted to my lifestyle from me doing just that, then we go from there. But it's not about me, you know, trying to pull people to the side and tell them, hey, this is what you should be doing with your life and not what you're doing already.
No, that's dope, because I'm not a vegan, but I do see a lot of the benefits to the vegan lifestyle. I think the lifestyle has a lot of perks, a lot of pluses. And I think there are a lot of components to that lifestyle that even if you don't want to be a vegan, you should definitely include, such as the, you know, increased intake in plant matter, vegetables, fruits, things of that nature. All of those things are wonderful. It's always overshadowed by the personality of the vegans you meet, which I think is why those things get overlooked. So, like, it was just interesting because when you said you're a vegan, like, you know, usually when people say they're a vegan, it's like, yeah, I already knew because you're also an asshole. but, you know, when that's absent, you know, you just be like, all right, so what's going on over here?
So right. That's all that was. I'm sorry for taking us off subject.
No, you ain't. So I just got one more question, because here in Tallahassee, you know, we got hard water. When you step out the shower, your whole body going to be like off white or eggshell white or any other shade of white, because the water is just extremely, extremely hard.
The water hates black people?
I think it does. I think it saw some of them KKK recruitment flyers and went and joined. I also wash my hands about 12 times a day. I just like my hands to be clean, and the hard water, and it's causing like the skin to not react the way I want it to. So, what advice or what products should somebody like me be using who washes my hands a lot to kind of keep my skin from cracking and drying?
Especially in the winter months, right? So shea butter definitely is my number one thing that I use. So what I would do is I would advise everyone to go to www.nurturology.net, and then you'll click on shop, and then from shop you'll have oils and butters at the top, and you'll already be in that section. So, and then you'll click the shea butter in there, and our shea butter is the best shea butter, and we get it straight from the source. In Africa and Ghana. So, you know, we definitely stand by our shea butter very firmly and confidently. And then, you know, you order an 8-ounce, you can order a 16-ounce, and whichever one you order, what I usually do is I'll take from the container that I have it in, which is, you know, the 8-ounce or the 16-ounce container, and then I would scoop a little in, like, a smaller container that I can, you know, just kind of keep on my person. And then I can just dip in from that, you know, get in between my fingers, you know, my knuckles, you know, that's the part that'd be the ashiest, you know, right there between the knuckles. You know, you reach out to shake somebody's hand and you got the knuckles in between that crack right there between your thumb. Your yeah, you get right up in there with that shea butter and you good to go.
Y'all just going to talk about me this whole interview. Huh?
Yeah, Joe, you might be washing your hands a little bit too much, though. Like
I might do. I'm not going to deny that. I just, you know, I like my hands to be clean, man.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it's not. But you know, like you got to fix, because you don't want to get sick. I mean, that's crazy. You might wash him sick because he washes his hands too much. Wait, what? You know, like, you might be doing too much, Joe. Like, what is going on in your life that you feel like you need to wash your hands?
Don't be trying to have no intervention with me right now, man.
Nah,
I'm trying to have no.
Because we got her online. She's dropping bombs, and I feel like she can help you, Joe. She like, nurturology, man. Like, nurture yourself.
Look. I am, okay, my brother. That's why she here, okay, my brother. Don't you be trying to intervene on me like that.
What are you washing your hands up? But like, what are you touching?
I be shooting dice in the alley and back them boy back there, man. You know.
Need some new dice partner.
Hey man.
So I got another question, and this one is not off subject, but off subject.
As always.
It's still on subject with her and what she's doing, though. Leave me alone, man.
Do your thing. Do your thing.
So we're going to transition off of the health and the moisturizing, because Joe already has low self-esteem, and each one of these questions kind of hurts his feelings a little bit. So let's move on to – so you have this organization, Melanin Mothers Meet, M3. I like M3. What's that all about?
Baby. Melanin Mothers Meet. Okay, so pretty much what M3 is a service provided for nurturology, by nurturology for melanated mothers in the Tallahassee community. We have a plethora of resources for women and babies, and we are here to give melanin mothers back their power of being emotionally sound, informed of options pertaining to prenatal care, pregnancy, birthing, postpartum, and overall mothering our melanin babies. And so, you know, I've been doing this since August of 2016. That was my first interest meeting I had. And, you know, it always, you know, when you have a baby or an idea, you know, it always grows bigger than you know, expected it to when you first create or when you first start, you know. And so, you know, where I was then versus where I am now has truly really shown myself, you know, the power, you know, of thought. And, you know, I'm just thankful that I have the resources and the connections and am able to network with those who believe in the same thing that we do with M3. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Don't, because I'm trying to get pregnant. So, not me, but.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
Yeah, I
know Joe got a comment. That's why there's that pause there. Go ahead, get it out your system. Go ahead.
Patch. I ain't gonna say nothing. Man, I'm good. I ain't gonna say nothing this time. You get a get out of jail free pad.
You just made me forget what I was gonna say.
Go good. So what made you create the Melanin Mothers Meet? Was it something that you went through as a mother, like before you had a baby or during your pregnancy, or was it just paying attention to things that were going on around you or women that were going on around you? But, like, what inspired you to say, okay, this is what I really need to be doing for this community?
What inspired me to create M3 was the simple fact of looking at my own needs, you know, as a new mother, you know, you have the baby and, you know, you have, you know, this help, and then, you know, if you have a husband, he's there. You know, but, you know, men only understand so much about woman, period, and then especially mothering women. And so I knew that I wasn't the only one that, you know, could agree to that. So I wanted to create, like, a safe haven for other women to come to be able to express their thoughts and their feelings and be able to, you know, just enjoy life without judgment from outsiders, you know, however they want to develop their mothering, what they want to create, you know, as far as what motherhood looks like to them. You know, I had my child at home medically unassisted with my doula. My doula delivered my baby, and I was squatting next to my bed on the floor. So it was just my mom, my dad, and my husband and my doula. And I had no medical complications. Matter of fact, my midwife got there about an hour later to weigh the baby, make sure the baby was good, you know, full vegan pregnancy, full, just everything that they teach you that you cannot do, you know, I was able to do. I did the lotus birth, so where the umbilical cord falls off on its own 3 days after, which is what my experience was. You know, so just, you know, everything natural, everything holistic, you know, not, you know, using third parties, you know, what I call third parties, you know, hospitals. You know, if you don't have to use the hospitals, I always say don't, you know. My daughter, you know, is 2 years old now and has never touched a foot in the hospital. And, you know, and that's just my, you know, you know, opinion on what, you know, how we want to raise her. But if you don't have to, then don't, you know, but you definitely have to do research. That's not anything that you just, you know, decide to do and then you don't do the proper research. You know what I mean? So let's shoot that disclaimer in there real quick.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I wanted to be able to share my experience with other mothers to let them know that, hey, we can do this because, you know, with infants, you know, dying, you know, so much in the Black community, you know, before, you know, the baby is even, you know, 1 month or 2 months, it's just, it's sad, and there needs to be some type of shift in the knowledge that our Black women have on pregnancy, on preconception, on birthing, on labor and delivery, on postpartum, you know, so these things need to be taught because they're not taught, and especially women that have to have Medicaid and on welfare and all those types of things. So, what M3 is, and M3 is a subliminal, you know, letter and number that represents me, you know. So when women see M3, I want them to see me, themselves, we, you know, as a collective, and to know that that's what it means. You know what I mean? So we are a reflection of each other. So me doing all these things, you know, naturally and holistic, means that the same thing can happen with my sister over here or my sister over there. You know what I mean? So whether, regardless if your salary is this or if you ain't have, you don't have no salary, we can still be the same type of mother if that's what they choose.
Okay.
I'm glad I didn't make that joke about M3 being me, because
you was gonna say it was you.
Well, me. I was gonna. Well, actually, it would have made me because I got it. M3 equals me. Cause I was looking. That's why I said I like M3. You know what? Yeah. I like what you said about the. So how does that work? Matter of fact, let me ask you this, because I do have three kids now, and I actually agree with you in terms of not wanting to see the inside of the hospital. That's just me as a black person. I don't think hospitals have black people's best interests at heart, and history has borne that out. So at the least amount of time I can spend in a hospital, the better. Right. But I am interested. you talk about preconception and pregnancy and things of that nature. What are some of the things that you think are should be going on with a woman that is trying to conceive, or, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Is that a good question?
So you're saying before, during, and after pregnancy, as far as what,
like,
they should
before,
be doing?
Before the before conception, before the pregnancy, what should mothers, potential mothers, be doing to prepare their bodies for pregnancy?
Okay, so I can speak from my experience. Is that okay?
Sure, sure.
Okay.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
Right. So what I did, you know, when it came to knowing that I want to have a baby, you know, sometime soon, not really sure, you know, when, as far as, like, timeline-wise, but I knew that I wanted to have one before I was 30, and I'll be 29 in a month or so. So a few years before I had my child, I changed my diet. So, you know, I knew that I didn't want my child to live in a temporary space, a temporary womb space for those 9 months, and then my womb was toxic. I didn't want my womb to be toxic. I didn't want, you know, my womb to be a graveyard. I didn't want my womb to have things in it that were not beneficial to the preconception stages, the pregnancy stages, the delivery stages. I wanted to have as least complications as possible. And so for me, I was able to change my diet, change, you know, what I did for my womb, did womb cleansing. I did vaginal detoxing. I did just things that will prepare my body internally to create a space for my child that was best in my life. So okay. Diet, you know, the thought process as far as even, you know, becoming pregnant, or, you know, before becoming pregnant, a lot of women look at pregnancy as, you know, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm scared, I don't know what to do, or, you know, you only hear pregnancy stories that are horrible, like horror pregnancy stories. And so I wanted to make sure that the circle of women that I was around were conducive to the type of pregnancy that I wanted to have. So, you know, making sure that I'm around natural mothers, making sure that I'm around vegan mothers, making sure that I'm around other women who are, you know, going to be benefiting to how I wanted to have my child. So
that's what's up. So I do want to ask this question. What is the most important information that a mother and a couple needs to know to have a successful at-home birth?
Okay. So I would start with the support system. So I think that is the most important thing, is to have, you know, to find or reach out to other people that are doing what it is that you want to do. You want to do an at-home birth, then, you know, reach out to other women who may have done at-home births, to other fathers who've been, you know, around their women when they had a home birth. Like for me, my doula, she and her team had what is his third, three home births, where he actually delivered the baby and there was no medical assistance. And so, you know, just knowing that for me, when I first, you know, hired her on, that was enough. You know, it was just like, oh, okay, well, she did it, then I know I can do it, you know. And then having, you know, her king and my husband talk to each other about, you know, just different things pertaining to the experience, you know, so that that can be encouraging for him as well, were things that helped me come to the senses of, okay, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to be confident in it, you know, and I'm going to do it, and it's going to be successful. Also doing research on it, so, and, you know, and staying away from, you know, not being unaware of what could happen. That's not what I'm saying, but spending more time focusing on what you want to happen. You know what I mean? So instead of the what is, focusing on what will be. Affirmation.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, because I want to be that husband that deliver my own child. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on, brother.
Forget them hospitals. So,
yo,
because I know what I've read. Like, I know I've really been like studying a lot of stuff over the last 10-15 years. I know what I've read and information I've come across, conversations that I've had, and even being able to see results and watch children mature over time. And so I understand what the doctors and the hospitals and things are saying. But look at all the bad things that are coming out of these realms, and then when you're looking at the natural births and seeing all the success stories. Now, of course, if you don't have the right information, you're trying to have a natural birth, it's not going to turn out right. But if you have the right information, right people around you, it could be beneficial, and then you don't have to have your child all doped up and all these other things, and the mother don't have to be all jacked up in the hospital. So
mm-hmm.
That's where I am with that.
Yeah.
So,
I'm still reading up on a lot about childbirth. I have three kids, so I am somewhat knowledgeable on the Western practice. But as far as the squatting and all of that, that's always interested me. I just never really sat down and really researched it until maybe a couple months ago. I finally started looking at it seriously. But it's really interesting, just even in the comparison, like the, you know, how, like, never even considered it as something that was still being done, and then realizing, like I said, maybe 6 or 7 months ago, that, you know, this is still the primary birthing positions for women all over the world. You know, it's crazy how the dynamic is, how we're taught certain things in America in this culture, and how so much is left out. You begin to wonder how much healthier our babies might be, how much healthier our women might be, how much safer childbirth might be if some of these practices during childbirth were eliminated. You know, like you have the woman lying on her back on this bed, not because it adds any benefit to her. It actually makes her position more difficult, but because it makes the physician's job easier. Like, that, how does that make sense? So you're going to make her job harder to make his job easier? So, I don't know. It's just that whole thing is just interesting to me, and hearing you talk about it is very interesting. It makes me want to look into it even more.
Right. Now two things you said, Yada. And adding on to the conversation about the squatting, so what's the benefit of squatting during pregnancy over laying down, as well as the benefit of allowing the placenta to fall off by itself?
So with squatting versus lying down when you're having your child, with squatting, you're allowing gravity to do its job. So gravity is going to happen regardless of what you do. So if you're lying down, the gravity is going to be there. If you're squatting, the gravity is going to be there. But what the difference is when you're squatting, you're doing more of a benefit to your body and to your baby working with gravity versus working against gravity. So when you're lying down, you're kind of working against gravity because you're not, you know, we know the birthing canal, you know, is pretty much, you know, up and down, right? So
right.
And not horizontal, vertical more
right.
so. So if you're standing up, you know, or squatting or any of those positioning, you know, to where you're aiding the baby out with gravity's assistance, that's going to more so lessen the laboring time. And, you know, a lot of different things also are that come with labor, you know, lessening the laboring time. But that's one of them in addition to everything else. You know, versus while you're lying down, it may take a little longer for the baby to come down the birth canal because you're not working with gravity, with nature's law. You're not working with it.
Right.
And then also with the umbilical cord, you're able to hold on, the water is talking. Hold on real quick. But you're able to allow the child to get all of the blood that flows from the placenta into the child, you know, fully. So it, you know, on the third day for my child, and before it was dried out, and that's when I knew that that's when I knew it was, you know, it was done, it was over because it fell off. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
right.
Making sure that the child is getting all of the nutrients from the blood from the placenta was the focus.
So. And also, how did you care for the placenta for those 3 days?
So what I did with the placenta is I had herbs. So I had lavender herbs.
Okay.
I would cover it basically with the lavender herb, with sea salt, and also with rosemary. And then I would dress it, you know, and with, you know, dress it with those herbs. And then after, you know, after a few hours, I would dress it again, just kind of, you know, continue to clean it, you know, for the placenta is an organ. So it's, you know, it's
right.
gory looking, you know, or it can be. So if you're not, you know, caring for it, you can get something different than what you're going for. But,
right.
as long as you're, you know, dressing it and, you know, making sure you're paying attention to, you know, how long, you know, you need to keep it without dressing it again. That's important. So, yeah, that's
okay.
pretty much what I did. Lavender, sea salt, and rosemary. Those are the three herbs that I
and,
used. And
obviously and did,
before then, I rinsed it off.
Right. And did you have it in, like, was it in cloth or, like, some kind of container or?
So I had, like, almost like a small bucket.
Okay.
I had, like, a small bucket. And I was able to get a chest pad
mm-hmm.
that I know elderly use sometimes when laying down for, you know, to catch the moisture.
Right, right.
So I would wrap it in that inside of a bucket, and then I would put the herbs with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. And I asked it like that, so I just want to make sure that when people – when you know, the people are listening, that they understand the process of that, because I've heard that information, I've read that, but the way you articulate it, you know, kind of spells it out and gives a good picture for people. So.
Yes.
All right. Pat, you learning something?
Yeah, man. I got like 18 tabs open in my in my browser, man. I'm Googling like crazy over here.
That's what's up. So
I'm just a man.
Now, I do want to ask this about what women are eating and the cravings, because I'm not a woman, so I try to be the man that don't try to tell women how to be women, because I'm a man, right? So I like to get information about women from women to give to women. So as far as the cravings during pregnancy, a lot of women have different types of cravings. I don't know how to tell them to do anything about the cravings, but how can women who have those cravings not necessarily, you know, bend to those cravings, and how could they more so stick to their healthy lifestyle rather than falling into the cravings or whatever?
Okay, so I can only speak from my experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like I told you, while I was vegan, all right, I am vegan. I've been vegan for about 6 years now.
Right.
And once I was pregnant, I had a craving for some lemon pepper chicken wings. Now, obviously, we know that lemon pepper chicken wings are not vegan, right? So I was just really curious, like, okay, why in the hell am I, you know, craving chicken? I ain't craved chicken in I don't know how long, you know, but why am I craving it now that I'm, you know, pregnant? So mm-hmm. I researched it. I looked it up, you know, to see if there were other vegan moms that were craving, you know, meat during pregnancy. And what I found out made sense. You know, it was more so about, it was more so about the actual vitamin or the salt intake or the protein intake that I was craving versus the actual chicken wing. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's not, it wasn't the, you know, and that was what my brain, you know, formulated that protein or that salt or that, you know what I mean? That's what my brain formulated. The vitamin or the protein that I was needing, it formulated into a chicken wing instead of saying, hey, you just need to eat you something, some protein, or you just need to eat something with some salt on it, or you need to, you know what I mean?
Right.
So you know, that's what.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying that's what, you know, just to answer your question, that's what, you know, as far as, like, what I researched, what happened. So what I was able to do was, after I researched that, you know, to go into finding something that, you know, had that same either taste or have those same functions that I was missing that I wanted, you know, like, you know, having something that's salty, so maybe I eat some peanut butter, you know, on some on a celery stick or something. You know what I mean? And have some peanut butter. I know something for me. I used to eat avocado straight, and I would just love avocados, or I would eat cucumbers, you know, straight, or I would get nuts and eat nuts. I love cashews, so I would eat a lot of cashews or eat a lot of, you know, almonds or, you know, just different nuts. You know, and that's how I would balance out that want or that need for some lemon pepper chicken wings. And maybe I would even, you know, season something with lemon pepper, you know what I mean, just to, you know, counteract that that craving. And that would knock the craving right out.
Okay, that's what's up. Mm-hmm. That does make sense, though, like being able to tell exactly what your body is asking you to give, and your body is going to speak the language that you used to speaking to it. So.
Exactly.
Because yeah, we talked about that during a diet show, or another nutrition show we were having, where we were talking about cravings and how when your body's craving something, it's not that you're necessarily craving that particular food. You're craving a particular vitamin or nutrient or whatever that your brain associates with that food, and it, you know, it speaks the language of your desires. So it's kind of hard to tell somebody, man, you really are craving, you know, like iron right now, you know, and then they're like, well, where do I get iron from? I don't know.
Right.
So instead, right, it'll make you crave whatever food you've eaten that was rich in iron. Hey, go
right,
get some more of that stuff, you know. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Dope. That's dope.
So
remind me of the story of the man that was stranded in the water. All he had was fish. He was stranded for like 30 days. And he said after 15 days, he didn't even want the fish meat no more. He started eating like the fish eyes and the fish brain. And all that stuff just became so appealing to him, and it became so delicious. And then, you know, once he got nourished back to health, he couldn't eat it no more. He found it disgusting. You know, while he was stranded, though, his brain needed certain minerals and nutrients that could only be found in these specific parts of the fish that we typically throw out. But all of a sudden, it became delicious. He couldn't stop eating it.
Right.
We don't want to eat no fish, huh?
So, right. I do want to ask this question before we get to the end of the interview. About postpartum depression, because I know a number of women experience postpartum depression. So what is the cause of postpartum depression, and how can some women help prevent themselves from experiencing it, or if they do experience, they don't have, like, serious bouts with it?
For me, with postpartum depression, well, first of all, you know, what happens with that type of depression is, you know, when you kind of get overwhelmed, with the duties of a mother, you know, quickly. Because, you know, obviously before that day or, you know, before these days with this baby, you weren't having to, you know, do these things at all, you know. And so now you have to, you know, wake up in the middle of the night, you know, you're breastfeeding, you have to breastfeed the baby in the middle of the night. You have to change the baby's diaper. The baby might not sleep throughout the night. You know, most times than not, they don't. I would say I was thankful to have mine. She was able to sleep most of the night, but, you know, still having those times where you have to wake up when before the baby, you know, you wouldn't have to wake up, you know, and then, you know, being able to, you know, entertain the baby and teach the baby, just all of the attention that has to go toward the baby. A lot of mothers don't really know how to find the time to bring the attention back on themselves. So you kind of get lost in mothering so much that you don't create the space for self-love and self-care any longer. You know, some mothers will go days without even taking a shower because there's no time, and especially mothers who, you know, don't have men, you know, right there in the forefront with them. So, you know, thank God for you all, you know, that are there for the mothers, because that's a big help. But, you know, just for those who don't have that, and even those who do have it, you know, it can still be a lot of stress on the mother, because, you know, these are duties and things that you didn't have to do, you know, just a day ago. You know what I mean? So,
right. Right.
And, you know, with postpartum, I focus on that a lot with Melanin Mothers Meet. I had a sister friend who was pregnant, and, you know, after she had a baby, Melanin Mothers Meet, we hosted the baby shower, and then after she had the baby, you know, we were able to formulate committees that, you know, would go to her house during different shifts, where we would do chores, we would do, you know, we would cook, we would communicate, converse with her, you know, because a lot of the times, you know, we're as mothers, we're talking and cooing and goo-goo gaga into babies all day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, adult conversation is very important, and a lot of people don't really understand that, you know, mothers, sometimes they just need to have a conversation with somebody that's, you know, the same age, or, you know what I mean? Like somebody that's not
right.
a month old or 3 weeks old,
right.
Or, you know. And that can help a lot with depression, you know, when you have that support system, when you have that team, you know, that's going to come in and help you, you know, with the daily tasks that you have to do. Because, you know, when you're focusing so much on the child, everything else gets put on the back burner, including yourself. And so when you have that help from other women in the community, you know, that gives you that much more confidence to do other things that you need to do.
Right. Yes, ma'am. That's good information. All right, Pat. You ready?
Yeah, last question. Let's hit it.
So this is how, because Pat's special, so we got to set his question up a little something like this so he can feel good about himself.
So, if you were the all-knowing, all-powerful, all-encompassing ruler of Black America, what would you change, and what would your message to the people be?
What I would change, I would definitely create a mental space that was conducive to Black's upward mobility. So I think that while doing that, you know, creating, classes or conversations or communication skills that helped us to really hone into our childhood traumas so that we can, you know, come forth with, you know, solutions with things that we dealt with as children and be able to, you know, rectify those things as adults so that we're not 50 years old and 60 years old and we're still, you know, holding on to things that happened to us when we were 10 or 12 or, you know, 5, and, you know, because those types of things can help hold us back. So definitely wanting to touch bases there and just as well as, you know, allowing people to live, you know, just to not let your circumstances consume you to the point where you're pausing your own life because of trivial things. You know what I mean?
Right.
So teaching people how to do that. Mm-hmm.
That's what's up.
Now,
and we, Yes, ma'am. And see, the thing, we ask that question, that's our one of our main questions that we like to ask to all of our guests. And we just like the different range of answers that we get, because we see a piece of the answer in every answer that everybody gives us. And we're finding out that a lot of people have some of the same ideas and thoughts. It's just, I think we have a hard time communicating that to each other sometimes. But that's mm-hmm. one of the beauties of that question, is we get to really see the similarities and the differences, but more so similarities of the different black people from around the globe that we actually come in contact with. So thank you for that answer, and thank you for the information, because you've given our audience great information that they can definitely use immediately. And so before we wrap this up, can you give your website information, your social media information, and where people can reach you?
Yes, you can reach me at www.nurturology.net. My Facebook is Self Love, because I am a reflection of self love as well as you are. So SELF LOVE, Self Love. You can also reach me on Instagram at @the_scalp, SCALP_nutritionist, NutritionIst. Also, you can reach me on Instagram at Nurturology_LLC. And please email me at subscribe.nurturology@gmail.com.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. It was definitely a pleasure having you on. We definitely look forward to having you on here in the future as you continue to grow, as you continue to do more things and help more people.
Yes, brother. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. And definitely shout out to everything that you have going on, from helping the women in the holistic health side to the mothers, and especially the homeschooling. Real briefly, can you give people information about what you do within the homeschooling realm?
Yeah, so recently we just had an event called Homeschooling in Color, Returning the Focus to Our Children, where we had Queen Thais from Atlanta, Georgia, and Dr. Samori Kamara, who lives in Ghana right now, and they pretty much presented on why it's important to, have your children homeschooled because of the public, what he calls the public school system, how it's not doing our black students any good. You know, public school is not meant for the progression of black children, period. Just pretty much going into that more so is what we do. So like you said, if anybody has any questions, definitely reach out to me and we can go further into detail there.
Okay, definitely would. And how can they get in contact with you on the homeschooling side? The same social media?
Same social media, just, change the subject, and then we can go from there.
Okay, cool. Well, once again, thank you for being on the show with us today, and definitely had a blast talking with you. We learned a lot, and looking forward to having you back soon.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for having the space, creating the space for our people, because it's definitely needed in the community. And so I'm just glad that I can, be a part of this space with you all. So give thanks, Ashe, amen, all that good stuff.
Yes, ma'am, you family, so it's all good.
Yes, all right. Well, y'all take care, and thank you for having me once again.
No problem. Talk to you later.
Okay, talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Pat, you still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, man, do your thing.
What you talking about?
I don't know. Tap dance, I don't know. Rap, bus, freestyle, whatever you need, though.
Oh.
Hey, man.
Yeah.
Hey, man, y'all know how I go, man. Remember, www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about myself, Joseph Ward, Patrick Irvin, J.A. Zionist, or Jamie the Crazy One. And then you can learn more about the Freedom Train and all of our lineups. And remember, we have a new show coming up very soon with Tea Time Black Women Talk. We have black women breaking down topics from a black woman's perspective, and always, as always, empowering black women. So if you don't know, now you know. You better learn, because if you ain't learned, I don't know what to tell you. But I'm Joseph Ward. He is Patrick Irvin. And we out of here. Peace.